into places bigger than them, to do exploits beyond them. And soon God is going to shift the environment to make it possible for the righteous to flourish. We have survived, but it is time for us to succeed. Wait a minute. I'm not just talking about money. Because life will put you in a position that money can't help you with. The moment you get too impressed with what you got, God will show you that what you got will not work up against what you up against. God has put you in a place where only miracles can prevail. Do you hear what I'm saying? So when I start talking about succeeding, I'm not talking about zeros on your check necessarily. For some people, you need a breakthrough in your finances. Other people need a breakthrough in their marriage. And it would be priceless to have peace in your house. Other people need your children back. The devil has taken your children hostage. God wants you to get a breakthrough. Every Mother's Day, your heart starves for love. Every Father's Day, your heart starves for recognition. You watch television, see other people being recognized and loved, and then roll over in a situation that does not appreciate you. We're not all starving for dollars. Some of you are starving for opportunities, waiting for doors to open and ways to be made.
Blue railroad train and going down the railroad track. It makes me feel so doggone blue to listen to that old smokestack. Drivers are rolling on, leaving me here behind. Give me back them good old days and let me ramble down the line. Lonesome train, I love to hear the whistle blow. She's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me want to go. I've got the blues, longing for her company. Many miles from where I am to the only one for me. It's so lonesome here, waiting for the manifest. I hope that engineer is kind enough to let me be his guest. Pound to me, take me everywhere I want to go, get my transportation free.
Dave Monk, Prairie Monk, WAFT Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. Today is Sunday, November the 26th, 2017, and this is the Prairie Monk Show. WAFT's weekly look at the environment, rails, trails, and greenways, and everything that Dave has been up to, including a house and a symphony this week.
I was standing outside the MTD building this yesterday, and waiting for a bus. I locked my keys in my car. I didn't lock them in the car. It was just the keys wouldn't work, so I had to do something about it. And I was watching the embankment across from MTD building, and I thought, well, there look like prairie plants there. So yes, the MTD between the railroad and the MTD building, there was an embankment, and it started to cave in. So they put up a retainer wall, and behind the and on top of the retainer wall, there are prairie plants. There's a little blue stem. There's a Canadian wild rye. There's side oats. And I thought that was rather wonderful. So we'll try and show you some pictures of those plants. Then it was getting to be near 7 o'clock, and the downtown Champaign had a parade. And I was, I'm always impressed by the number of people that come to these events. And so it was well attended. And I started off watching at the end of Market Street, but I realized that the lights didn't shine quite so well on people, and I couldn't recognize people. Some people recognized me. City people went by, and it's a city parade, City of Champaign. So I moved to better lights, but people were waiting for a normal parade with its lights, and especially at this time of the year, lots of parade vehicles that had taken a lot of time to prepare, and there's sometimes a delay for a while some piece of equipment gets around the corner, and so people were talking to each other. People were receiving wrapped sweets and sometimes advertising signs, but it just all in all, people were recognizing each other and waving to each other, and we had bands and players, and that all it was adds to the merriment, and you have to appreciate the leaders who lead those bands. And there were celebrants, you know, who were just enjoying themselves on a go-kart, and people from different organizations. There was a huge wine bottle balloon, which I've seen elsewhere, but it was in the parade. I wonder how it goes down the streets without encountering overhead wires, but it was positively huge. Then there was a bicycle powered by one person, but two people were in the seat behind, and you can rent the bicycle if you want, but it just adds to the character. There were a city physical plant was there with signs and stoplights and all sorts of glowing electricity. And then the last piece of equipment was, it comes out every year. It belongs to the Kuhn store, which is owned by Dr. Youngerman. And it has a battery of reindeer, followed by a very traditional sleigh. And I kind of enjoyed that and talked to people on the way back. And it's always fun to be there. During the week, I went out to I was driving past Busey Woods on the way from High Cross Road, and the sun had just come out and after a storm, and Busey Woods was looking very nice. Had a lot to do with Busey Woods in the past. It was a controversial site. The woods is on a meander that comes down through the country club, and that meander was channelized or straightened with a bypass. So the Busey Woods is on the leftover meander, and that's rather interesting. The public wanted to... or the conservation public was very anxious to get it as a piece of the Big Grove. It's a little on the periphery of the Big Grove, but it has that history. And it's also a very nice vernal pond now. A vernal pond is a green pond that comes back with organisms in the spring when it's wet and the cut-off meander fills. And... that vernal pond is at the moment dry with the leaves, but when you get a little rain, it accumulates again. And the organisms about to adapt to that sort of thing. The old meander had meander scars where the meander stream had gone through in different places at different times, different amounts of rain. Erode differently, but they leave scars, and in those scars you get creatures that like things to be damp. There are also dump areas, so there's a little high spot in Busey Woods where there was a dumping for a while with the thought of it being a high-rise housing site or an industrial site. After a lot of debate, the university was given the site, and then eventually it went to the Abandoned Park District. And various people have had a lot to do with that area. I was cleaning up things and stumbled over an article about the Natural Area Study Group, and the study group put together people, a woman named Anne Fireham came to town with her husband, who was a dean or an historian, and she came to my office to ask if there was anything she could do. We were working with Natural Areas Instructional Development, and we did have a group of people that were docents. These were mainly university students, but I said, yes, if you want to do something, you could take off with the Natural Areas Study Group, and she did. So she really took off. She had developed... our intent was to have people who are docents. They go to natural areas and then work with getting people to be knowledgeable of local natural areas so that they can then speak those sites to students and non-students and develop a group of people who could interpret. It started out at Thornburn with the Park District. The Park District was very supportive, and eventually the Park District took over. There were associates, so Anne had a associate, Anita Purvis, and she was knowledgeable in biology and had that sort of training, and She especially was looking at the mussels that are in the vernal pond. And they had a platform out there so that you could go fish for mussels. And Anita Purvis and Ann Fine and a bunch of others Roger Martin's wife and a few others, I can't remember at the moment, but they were the basis of encouraging the modern-day Anita Purvis Center. And the Anita Purvis Center has been so popular that it has been expanded. And many people, groups like the Grand Prairie Friends and others, Audubon and others, meet at that location. There's a little visitor center there. There's an interpretive center. There's space where you can sit people down and say, this is what we're going to do and why, and then they can get out into the field. And so the trails through the woods have been part of that, and it's a very nice part of the Urbana Park District. And it's been formalized by the Urbana Park District and provided with that sort of time frame. So that's probably enough about Anita Purvis Center. It's rather wonderful, and it's part of the Busey Woods event. And it goes to other open space that the Park District has, like Meadowbrook Park and Weaver Prairie and a whole bunch of other parks that the Park District work with in both Champaign and Urbana. I'm doing something unusual here. This week we lost a house on High Cross Road, which was the home of Gordon Binkert. And Gordon Binkert was a rather outstanding musician. He grew up in the Dakotas, went to college in the Dakotas. Actually, when he was there, he was recognized as one of five best young pianists. He was at the age of 15. He went on to Harvard, where he started to get involved with composition, and he did sonatas, and he did work with a whole bunch of different things, and he would have workshops and summer schools, and but a lot of his energy was his dreams. I expect were associated with the house that was on High Cross Road. He was very proud of that house because at least some of the timbers in the house were from the Big Grove. This is what you have to understand, that early settlement was coming to a prairie that in Champaign County was very wet. So finding a well-drained forest on the edge of this Yankee Ridge Moraine with some eskers underneath it where glaciers, moraine accumulation of silt and the like provided sort of a river under the ice, and that was a source of gravel and there's some protection from the woods. And this was a house that was on High Cross Road. At that time, there was an Indian Trail, which was more or less High Cross Road. But High Cross Road didn't go straight at that time. It went, it wiggled around this house. So the front of the house was not on the modern road. if you went to the gate on the road, you had to go take a little concrete path and go into the back door of this building. And that's not unusual. Some of the early trails we have did follow their own route, but were later straightened because people found the Jeffersonian north, south, east, west plat rather handy, and it certainly allowed people to identify where their plots were. So I've asked David to do something rather unusual. When Gordon Binkhood came to Illinois from Harvard, he started to compose, and he was an unusual composer for his era because he was not necessarily doing it with the aid of a piano. And he did go to the East every once in a while to dream. He was a music theorist and teacher at the University of Illinois for quite some time, and then decided to his publications got to be respectable enough that he could go independent. So he decided to go independent for about 25 years and write music. And he's not as well known as many composers, but I was last night listening to his symphonies and his compositions. And one of the reasons why I'm talking to you about this is because I find the loss of that house to be rather a serious problem, because we have a rail trail nearby, and it's a railroad bed, and it's fairly straight and fairly conventional. And we try to encourage people to use it in two different ways. There are always the people who want to go from A to B, and that's their destination. There are other people who want to waddle along this trail, and we can encourage them to move to the Lincoln Trail to the south, to where Lincoln used to travel. We ask them to go to the north, and the North Road in this case is on High Cross Road. You go past over 74, and you go past the Binkhead House and Binkhead Forest, and then on past Tiny Greens, past the Salt Fork coming down from Champaign-Urbana, and further north to Brownfield Woods, and with Treeley's Woods and Phillips Track to the left, to the east. And then you get to the early post office and early settlement of Urbana. So you're looking at the history, and so I regarded Gordon Binkhood as part of that history. And there are various reasons why the house might be removed. What's happened is that the family, after the parents' passing, has donated this to the Banner Park District. And there are all sorts of reasons why the house should come down. It might be old and not in good repair. It might be that you would like to save all the woods that Binkhead planted around, and they're growing well and they're well known. It's about a five acre, I would think. There was a little open space. I got involved because he was thinking to put in a prairie. And I remember taking slides to that house and talking to I'm not sure whether he was Dr. Binkhead. Certainly he had honorary doctorates, but he was on a doctoral program at Harvard, but he may have come to Illinois before he completed that. I'm not sure about that. But the intent is to use this site as a site for developing natural environments or gardens or pollinator places. And so it's to me a little a disappointment to see this icon go. Even if it were not in good repair, I would think that this was a valuable historic site. The site is still there. The house is not. The house was part of the history. So let's listen to... is it okay?
We're going to do a little bit of engineering and stuff right here. You specifically asked for the Second Symphony. I'm not actually coming up with...
Just an example of his music.
Okay, so how about the last... How many minutes would you like? I can give you as much as you want from the First Symphony.
Okay.
Okay, how about the last 4 minutes of his First Symphony here? Give us a second to fade in on that work.
So,
coming up now... And that was the Allegro from Gordon Binkard's Symphony Number 1, which appears to have been subtitled The New World. It's either 1 or 2. It's called The New World. It's hard to tell when you're online hunting these things down. And I know a couple of interesting, fun pieces of information. 10 years after he came to the university, which would have been 1959, it was 10 years on, he was elected by the university to our... Center for Advanced Studies. That same year, he received a Guggenheim Fellowship. And I was telling Dave off mic that there's a current U of I airshifter you can hear doing world music one of the days of the week, who is also a U of I faculty member and last year received a Guggenheim Fellowship. So there's a direct connection, well, one degree of separation, I guess we say, from Binkard and WEFT.
Yes. He also studied with Naim Pabel, and that gives him some recognition. What I want to do here is preach a little bit. I think that you need to know these sort of circumstances. It's very hard to know how to know. You have to talk to people, and I just happened to talk to someone who knew that the Binkard family had donated this 5 acres of woodlot to the Urbana Park District. And how do you know that? You have to constantly just talk to people and find out what their interests are and how it fits into your particular environmental interests. I go regularly to the markets, whether they're outdoor or indoor, because I talk to people who know generally what we do, and whether it's with educational resources in environmental science or with Heartland Pathways, and it's the sort of area where you start to dream. You might encourage people to do interesting things, whether it's with gardening or pollinatariums or a whole bunch of other things. And so what you're hoping for is a general awareness within your community. Urbana tends to do this a little more, in a little more structured manner than Champaign. Champaign is somewhat of a commercial town, and that's because the railroad came through Champaign, and then Champaign got to be West Urbana and then Champaign. So in summer, there's an exchange. The park district will run movies in Hessel Park, for instance, but Urbana has the natural areas like Busey Woods and Meadowbrook Park. So often the children that attend to these places are dependent on the Anita Purvis Center and the structure that is in Urbana, like Busey Woods, and it's close also to Brownfield Woods. And just knowing that balance is important. You would like to encourage the Champaign Park District to do a lot of natural history things, as Urbana does. And that has resulted in a number of employees from the Urbana Park District morphing over into the Champaign Park District, and the Champaign Park District putting in its own natural areas. They have a large prairie, for instance, down near Curtis Road. It's a little out of town. We need some plots of land in town where we can introduce people who might not otherwise go to other places. That's why we're interested in the prairie on either side of the railroad line. That is the Kickapoo Trail. Not everyone is going to go to the Kankakee Marsh, where there's a large volume of natural area. I was listening to a conversation about Madagascar this morning, and the loss of forests to the point that the small plots of land that are left are not connective enough for rare creatures to be able to breed and exchange their lives. So groups like the Missouri Botanical Gardens and others will go try to preserve those sites, but they're desperately needed for wood. And as you break up those sites into smaller sites, you have more edge encounters, and edge encounters are often very weedy, seedy places that aren't very natural. You can try to coalesce those forests by planting. You can try to burn at the right time, but sometimes the burning is at the wrong time. There's a way of raising the community awareness to the preservation of creatures other than humans. We're extincting creatures at such a pace that it just boggles one's mind. And there's a feeling in some circles that the environment is there to utilize without necessarily thinking about its sustainability. I went back to the Binghead site because I was wanting to see if any of the walnut or other beams taken from the Big Grove were there. They weren't obvious, and the trash had been taken away. And so the site is gone, and you have to say, well, we didn't catch that one. We didn't catch the elevator we lost. We didn't catch the pepsin factory. There's lots of things. So you lose more than you gain, but you need to keep your eye on the prize, because the prize is to keep some biodiversity there. Let's waddle up the road from the Binker Estate past Tiny Greens, where a lot of early or recent work was done. It was the Bagby family was there, and they encountered some criticism of problems with greens, and it wasn't in their domain, but it looked like it could be, and it more or less put Tiny Greens out of business. But there was a site that also needs to be preserved, and there are people working there who can do interesting things. Go a little further, you cross the Salt Fork, and that's an interesting place. You have a Yankee Ridge Moraine, which was low at that point, but it was enough to back up a lake of water, and then that lake of water breaks through, and so it gives us a little bit of terrain that we otherwise don't have in Champaign County. You have to go to Piatt or DeWitt or Vermilion County to get rolling territory that you can enjoy. So we go to Brownfield Woods, and right alongside Brownfield Woods was Natalia Belting. Natalia Belting's father was a history prof, and I think Natalia was also. She built a house which was a sort of French house with breezeways across the top, so you didn't have to air condition with an air conditioner. You open the breezeways and the house would cool. It's near to a little cemetery, and it's about 65 acres and with a tiny piece of prairie in one corner. There's a creek which is a tributary of the Salt Fork that comes through. It's nothing more than a drainage ditch, but it's not been straightened. That means that it has character. It has a meanders. It has a little beaches where a meandering stream would deposit
on one side and cut on the other side. It had fallen trees across this creek that you could move across. We created a little trail guide to that woods. And so you would come in the gate, and then there's a nice walnut tree right there. It would be worth thousands of dollars for veneer. So then you have a little bit of lowland, and you have to get across the creek without sort of walking in the mud. So people have to know how to walk across a tree that's down. And if you're not used to doing that, it means you have to get down on your backside and crawl across it. It's not easy if you are not used to this sort of outdoor procedure. And there's a little bit of the Yankee Ridge Moraine there, so you're going uphill. And in the spring, there's just glorious understory herbs, and it'll take you hours to go around this little trail. It's owned by the University Graduate College Committee on Natural Areas, and Jamie Ellis is in charge of that now. And it is just a wonderful little 65-acre prairie. As you go up on the moraine, you'll find some pits. And these are soil pits. They don't look that obvious, but if you know where they are, these soil pits give you an idea of what a zinnia soil is like, a dry soil, a gravelly soil, because it's on the moraine where the moraine had been dropping glacial till, this is probably good soil. I'm not quite sure how the forest got to be saved, but people did save some of the big grove. There was a road through this territory, and if you follow the local history, and people bring local history to me, because it's known that this is rather an interesting way of introducing people to their own heritage. The Phillips family had a story there, and they were the horse bolted on this little road through the Brownfield Woods, and actually they had to consider tossing the baby out so that the baby wouldn't be a part of a crash. But if you stand in Brownfield Woods at a certain location, you can see big trees on either side, and you can tell where the road was, and that's interesting and intriguing. You can look at big old trees, some of them 400 years old. How do we know 400 years old? Because the foresters have a way of drilling in and taking a sample of the rings, growth rings of the tree. And without opening up the tree to infestation, you can plug that hole up, and then you can get an idea of the history that this woodlot may have been sampled for wood. People were wanting wood, but there are still some trees there that are rather old. If you look at them carefully, you'll find that some of the roots of these trees have bracket fungi on them, and that will give you an idea that that root might be on the way out, or that part of the tree might be on the way out. So you have a big bur oak that you couldn't put your arms around with a bracket fungi coming out of it. And that is not only interesting for the bracket fungi, you can imagine whatever you want. You can put a little gnome under the protect it under the veranda of the bracket fungi. You can do your poetry, you can write music like Gordon Pinker did, but just sit and experience. And then to the west end, there was a little corner that probably had been harvested off, and it had prairie. And as you went through to that prairie, you had to bow down and go through an edge timber. So what is an edge timber? An edge timber is where the trees have light on the edge. And so instead of growing tall and straight to the light and being shaded by the trees on either side, there's an edge. And those trees are often trees that are oriented to a little bit more light. And you have to burrow your way through them to get to the little prairie. And if you know about prairies, if you fire them, then the trees will be lesser and the prairie will invade. If you don't fire, the prairie will be invaded by trees. And it's that balance that you're looking for. The Committee on Natural Areas under Dr. Kendi and Dr. Goetz and others, Shelford before that, were trying to combine some areas to the Phillips Tract and Treeless Woods so that they could get that connectivity where you have enough space for organisms to move back and forth. If you're a bacterium, you don't need an awful lot of space. You're very small, so you can occupy a teaspoon and have dynamics that are appropriate. But if you're going to deal with mammals, then you're going to have to deal with a larger space. The demolition people from the Pinkert House said that there were about 10 deer in that little space when they went to open it up. And they did have to open it up some to get trucks in to move the material. There are a lot of invasive species there, but they've been there for so long that they're like little trees. And I expect that since they're invasive species, they will be removed and the larger trees will be retained. But once again, you're talking about the dynamics of a wood that's only about 5 acres large. And through one end of it, there's a large power line. And the trees that were intended for that section have been removed because power lines age, and technology improves them too, but that aged line, when you put a lot of power through it, will bend. The lines will heat up and they'll drop down. And if there's a tree nearby, they can short to the ground and actually create a fire when you don't want a fire. It can short the whole circuitry out. So that area, right where the Binkert House is, has been a controversial area because people in genuine endeavor have planted trees under power lines, and you should not do that. You should know the trees that are small trees. It might be that you have a tree that's almost a shrub and you can grow that under a power line. But if you grow trees that are taller, then the power company has the right to come along and prune them. And sometimes the pruning is rather cruel, and you could see where it's happened. And sometimes that results in the death of the tree. So there has been at that very site quite a little bit of debate about what we should do with the power lines and whether they should be replaced with more recent technology which would stop the dropping of the line, or we don't put as much power through the line. That means you might have to design a bigger power grid. And that has been happening in the last 10 years. There's been a lot of planning, and it's a long way away from this site in some cases. It goes through the south end of Champaign and Champaign County, and you'll see towers going up everywhere. Some of them come into the university with big concrete towers. So you have to think about what's happening in that little portion of the Binkard estate has a relationship to a larger grid that goes across the country. Now people are thinking that they can do smaller than grid, so they have batteries, and they can create their own electricity, and that saves the problem of large grids. And there are various techniques there that you can make cool water at night, and then use it during the day if you want to air condition. But it needs a certain amount of education, and how do we do that? How do we co-op computers to the point that last week we talked about Plato and doing things that we could never do as humans, the repetitive. We have to teach the computer what to do. We have to have programmers that are rather wonderful that can sort out a paradigm and say, we're going to do it this way, and then you do have to have the backups. If this one doesn't work, then there's something else works, and then something else works if that one doesn't work. And doing that is in the realm of computer science degrees and engineering degrees, which are mainly looking at data and developing programs that allow you to have a basic program that you can apply to with other subsidiary programs. And we're using that to some extent. We're taking this program and videotaping it. So and that means we have to work at it at our end, and the computer helps us to do what we're doing. Right now I've learned to make a list of things by number, and then that allows me to figure out how long I can speak on a certain topic. And then we can put a picture in. If you just go by the seat of your pants, then try to put a picture in afterwards, that can take an awful lot of time. So we're working at those sorts of things. And the like of Parkland College helps that. This is another form of employment. This is at the very end of this, there's the person who still turns the shovel and moves the prairie plant or puts in the railroad tie or what have you. But there's a lot of technology here that humans have control over, but it can't be let go wild. You have to think about it, and you have to think about what you're doing. This work week, it was Thanksgiving, and I was visiting with a family where mother is a ceramic engineer. And what they're doing now is they're working with the CERL, the Army Corps of Engineers, a unit out of town on the west side of Champaign, and they're putting silicate aluminum type plastic mixes into cracks in railroad ties so that they don't break down so quickly. It used to be that you had a railroad tie that was harvested with a tree, and you had a broad axe, and you made the tie according to its grain. So it might be a bendy tie, but it was preserved because the environment couldn't get in at the sides as easily. Now, when you create a railroad tie with a saw, everything is straight, and that leaves the ends of parts of your wood available to break down. So then you have to put something like creosote in to preserve that tie for 100 years. But if you do develop cracks because there's this sort of liberality, then you can put cork the cracks and save the ties for a number of years. And you can probably do that in place. We're re-railing a section between Whiteheath and Seymour, and we're taking second-hand ties, which means that they do have some cracks. And I'm talking to railroad engineers about the possibility that we might be able to experiment with this sort of thing too. So there's this sort of huge gestalt where everything relates to everything else, and with great wonder we're including people in teams, so they work together and they get excited together and they have a twinkle in their eye and they shout at each other and they go, 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 and you can hardly wait to get to work. So this doesn't always happen, but it's something that we look forward to and we really enjoy it when it happens. And not surprisingly, not everything that we get excited about works. The next generation of scientists will find it quite different. And in there, you also have to think about people who are not scientists, there's people who are linguists. In actual fact, the computer science people have a language of their own. Sometimes you look at a word and it doesn't mean what you... In some direction, it means totally different from what it means in computer language. Then there are acronyms. I'm looking at David with a T-shirt. He's got W-E-F-T. So you have to know that W means whether you're on a certain side of the Mississippi. It's just so the acronym has... WEFT means you are part of this sort of... integration where you have a weft and a wharf on a printing
on a loom?
On a loom, mm-hmm. Yes. And so you bring those people together in that sense. And now you're looking at people that are doing this sort of thing with three dimensions. So if you go to a university open house, you'll find the engineers creating a plastic model of a car or simpler parts of a car. So how do we get this together? How do we make sure that the plastic doesn't get into the environment because it doesn't break down? How can you use organic materials to do this? The laser printing is in the forefront at the moment, but it's just one of those technologies, and we have to watch to see that it's effective. So I think we're near to the end, and this is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WAFT Champagne, 90.1 on your FM dial, and thanks for listening.
And Dave on the board. My ears, of course, perked up when Dave started talking about computer stuff. If you ever want to get in a discussion with a computer person about things that they accept that make no sense in the logical, non-programming world, X equals X plus 1 is a fundamental expression in so many programming languages. I understand why it makes no sense, but we use it anyway. So talk to somebody who programs computers why they use X equals X plus 1, and you'll have a jolly good either two-minute discussion or until you're bored and you walk away. The views and opinions expressed here are solely those of the speakers and nobody else. This is WEFT Champagne 90.1 FM, and it's now noon and time for Shruti, Music of India.